Lorna Doone, a radio dramatization in five parts by Brian Gere, based on the novel by R.D. Blackmore, with Cornelius Garrett as John Ridd and Stacey Dorning as Lorna Doone. The story is told by Jack Watson. Lorna Doone, Part 2.
After I had taken Master Huckaback to see the Doone Valley, and in consequence had a brief, distant glimpse of Lorna, all my love for her that had been kindled when I was but a lad of 14, all my love for her, I say, returned in full measure. The parish said I must have been bitten by a mad dog, so foolish I became in my ways, and so inattentive to the work of the farm. And that view of Glen Doone awoke in me a longing to return to it. By the route I had found all those years ago. Foolish I knew such a venture to be, but young men in love are ever foolish. I found the way again without difficulty, and to climb up the waterfall was easier, the water which had once come almost to my knees now being content with my ankles. I had more luck than I dared hope for as I kept back in a niche of the rock, I saw her coming toward me among the early primroses.
But if so thou ever strivest to be free, 'twill be my endeavor to be dear to thee. Hence may I ensue love, all a woman's due, comforting my true love with a love as true.
Lorna Doone!
Who are you and how do you know my name?
I'm John Ridd. Don't you remember?
The boy who came up the waterfall and cut his feet.
And you saved my life when they came looking for you.
Yes, I remember everything because it's so rare to see anyone new. But you seem to have forgotten how dangerous this place is.
Oh, no. I've forgotten nothing of that. I am very frightened. Except when I look upon you. I see I've offended you, Mistress Lorna. I didn't mean to.
Suppose they come. You're too big to hide too easily now.
Very well, I'll go. If they shot me, it would grieve you, I make bold to say. And it would be the death of Mother. Try to think of me now and then. And I'll bring you some new-laid eggs, for our young blue hen is beginning.
You're very kind, but you need not come to see me. You can put them in my secret place, the place I showed you. It's where I come to think, to be away from them.
Mistress Lorna, I wanted to ask you...
What?
Oh, nothing. It was just a foolish thought that came into my head. Many do. So I will say farewell.
Farewell, Master.
And now my wits were quite gone moon-raking, and for a week I could do little but dream and dream, and even took small delight in victuals. One thing worried me more than all the rest. How soon should I go again upon a visit to Glen Doone? I could not settle it, turn and twist it how I might. I liked not the falseness, the creeping and hiding. And even more than this, I feared how Lorna might regard it, whether I would seem to her a country youth not skilled in manners. And then my hands and face became so badly chapped by a bitter March wind that I thought Lorna might wish to see no more of them. It also lay upon my conscience that I had not made my dear sister any secret to this love. Many and many a time I tried, but could not. So, in the end, I resolved to consult Mother Meldrum, a wise woman who lived in a cave in a rocky valley by the sea.
Young man, you're a fool to be afraid of me.
Oh, but I'm not afraid, good mother, not I.
You're a bad liar, too. If you have any brains in your head, tell me why I should love thee.
Indeed, mother, I know not. Nor can I imagine. Brains I never had much of. And to the best of my knowledge, I never set eyes on you before.
Yet I know you, John Ridd, as well as if you were my own grandson. Do we remember a certain bog at the end of the River X near the old oak tree? And a little maid who would have died there, but for your strength and courage. And most of all, your kindness.
Why, yes, to be sure. I remember the little girl who fell into the bog. She would have been lost but for a little dog who saw me in the distance.
She would have been lost had you turned away. She were my granddaughter. And all I have on earth to love.
Indeed. I didn't know that. I took her home to Mother, and she gave her an old dress of Lizzie's, and we took her back where she told us. We didn't ask her more. And the shoes she lost are in the bog, not with us.
What do you think I'd care for her shoes? How simple you are. Now, tell me what has brought you to me. Not to be struck for sciatica, nor to be blessed for shingles.
No good, Mother. And as you say, I'm a bad liar, so I must tell you the truth. I'm come to know when I may go to see Lorna Doone.
Conrad, do I speak of a daughter of the men who killed your father?
I cannot tell. Who should I know? And what's it to you?
There's somewhat to your mother, John, and somewhat to you too, I do believe. And nothing worse could befall it.
You do not know the girl.
Nor need to. I tell ye, John Ridd, if you have any value for your body or your soul, or your mother or your father's name, have naught to do with any Doone.
You poor old woman with your bones and blades and pails of water and door keys. What do you know about the fate of a girl like Lorna, whom you've never seen? Look at me now, Mother Meldrum. Am I like a fool?
Oh, that you be, my son. And I wish it were another.
And for all the heed I took of Mother Meldrum's warning, I might as well not have bothered to consult her. I loved Lorna just as much as ever. I tried to sleep it off, and when that proved of no avail, I tried to work it away. And indeed, weariness and good feeding helped to pass a week or two. But when the weather changed in earnest and the southwest wind blew softly and my chaps were gone, it was more than I could do to keep from thought of Lorna. And as no Lorna came to me, and as my life was not worth living without constant sign of her, I dressed in grand attire, so far as I had it, and set forth again to find her. And when I climbed to the meadow and settled down to wait for her, what did I do but fall asleep with my best coat trailing in a bed of wet moss?
Master Ridd! Master Ridd!
Huh? Oh, Lorna!
Master Ridd, are you mad? The guard will be here any minute. Let me hide you.
I'll not move a step unless you call me John.
Well, John, then. Master John Ridd, be quick if you have any to care for you.
Oh, I have many that care for me.
Then hurry. It's the place you escaped from before.
And you really want to hide me?
Of course I do, but be quick. What's the matter? In a moment you will be quite safe.
Lorna, forgive me if I wrong you, but there's something I must ask. All those years ago, when you directed me here, it was dark, and I almost fell headlong down this well and drowned in it. I couldn't help wondering if...
I can't help wondering if you are indeed as stupid as you seem. That is just a well from which I draw water. In daylight, it is quite visible, and so are the steps to the top.
But then it was not daylight.
And then I was a very little girl thinking only how to save you.
Forgive me, Mistress Lorna. I am indeed very stupid.
And very big. Look, this place has another secret. If I draw aside this creeper, see? A narrow entrance into a much bigger room. Now follow me, if you can.
Oh. Ah. Oh. Ah. Oh. Oh.
Now you know why I call it my secret place. Big as you are, Master Ridd, you are small to any man of the Doones. They could never follow me here.
It is not only my height that causes me difficulty. I'm trying to be careful of something in my pocket. I said I'd bring you some eggs. Well, here you are. A dozen, if none be broken.
And each one wrapped in clover straw. How kind you are. I'm not used to kindness.
Mistress Lorna, you're not crying. Is it something I've said?
No, I'm not crying.
You must be very lonely here. Have you no one of your own age to keep you company?
Oh, only little Gwenny Carfax, my maid. She's beaten two or three other girls who used to wait upon me until they're afraid to come near.
Carfax? Then she's not a Doone.
No, she's Cornish, and very wide and short and flat, and she has none to pay her compliments. And if any did, she would scorn them as not being Cornishmen.
But how did she come here?
Oh, I found her one day.
Found her?
Yes. It's a very sad story. You see, I had an aunt here, and I loved her very dearly. But she became ill, And she asked to die somewhere else, for she said the Doom Valley was such an evil place the angels would never come for her here. So the men took her to a cottage in a lonely valley, and I used to visit her until she died. She was a good woman, and took great pains to teach me. Well, one day when I was coming home again from seeing her, I found a girl lying half dead by the wayside.
How had she come there? Did she have no parents?
Well, her mother died, and then her father, who was a miner, was brought by some people to be captain of a gang. And the last she saw of him was going down a ladder somewhere on the wilds of Exmoor. And she's never seen him from that day to this.
What a callous, heartless man.
Oh, but Gwenny says he was the most excellent father.
How can she say that after what he did to her?
She looks upon it as a mystery which will one day be made clear to her.
And what of you?
There's very little to tell of me.
But I want to hear it, Mistress Lorna. I'd far rather hear about you, however little it may be, than about this Gwenny Carfax. Who are your parents?
I don't remember them.
And they're dead?
Yes. They say my father was the eldest son of Sir Ensor Doom, and the bravest and the best of them. And so I am heiress to this valley, and sometimes they call me queen or princess.
But have you no one to turn to for comfort or friendship?
There used to be Aunt Sabina. Now there are only two who ever listen to me or try to help me. My grandfather, who seems to know what is right and wrong, but not to want to think of it, and a man of wisdom we call the Counselor.
How did the Doones ever come to this valley? They're not men of Somerset, and they're high-born, too, or so we believe.
Oh, indeed they are. How they came here, I cannot exactly say. I believe my grandfather, Sir Ensor, fell out with his cousin over the ownership of some land far to the north. Or was his land confiscated by the king? All this happened many years ago when Sir Ensor was a young man, and I do not know the whole story. All I know is that in his anger at losing everything, he did something rash and stupid and was made an outlaw. He and a few of his family came here, where they would not be known, and here they are still.
Have you never wanted to run away? You're not like the others. You cannot approve of the life they lead.
Of course I don't. But you must remember, I don't see the worst of it, or hardly ever. They never rob each other, and Sir Ensor always insists that in my presence they are correct and well-mannered. As for running away, where to, and who would take care of me?
I think I know one who would answer for that, Mistress Lorna.
Well, yes, there was one, about a year ago.
Stranger, you mean? A stranger came to this valley?
Yes, and it ended sadly, too. It was the first time I realized how evil my people were. It happened one day last summer. I'd been playing down here and was late for supper. I took a short cut through the ash trees in the middle of the valley.
Oh, I know them. I've seen them from above.
It was just beginning to get dark and a storm was gathering. I hate the thunder. And a young man suddenly stepped out in front of me.
Now, Cousin Lorna, my good cousin, if your voice is like the rest of you, it is very sweet, but pray keep it still unless you would have me killed.
I will not cry out unless you harm me, sir. But who are you?
Your very best cousin and guardian, Alan Brandir of Loch Orb.
My guardian? You?
You are Mistress Lorna Doom?
Yes.
Then I have that honor.
But you are my own age.
I'm much older. I'm almost 19. Now, am I to your liking? Does my cousin Lorna judge kindly of her guardian and her nearest kinsman? In a word, is our admiration mutual?
Do they trust you with a sword?
What? Oh, I see. I'm not ferocious enough. You must not judge all the world by your kinsman here. Brute size is not the only sign of valor. I can assure you I am not without some skill. And if the boldest and biggest robber in this valley should so much as lay a finger on you, then I would cleave him from head to foot before he could so much as cry out.
Don't talk so loudly, or you might have to do it, or try to.
Now, don't be angry with me, for I've had a long and hard journey for the sake of seeing you. I know where I am, and what I may expect if I am found. Besides, I've seen some border skirmishes. Once, some years ago, when I was just a lad.
I can't stand here idling, or they'll come looking for me. Only tell me how you are my guardian and why you have come here.
First, I am your uncle's son. Second, he put me to study the law. Not for my livelihood, thank God, but because he felt the lack of it in affairs of state. Now all I care for is adventure. Nevertheless, for amusement's sake, since I must be at my desk for an hour or so in the afternoon, I took to the sporting branch of the law. The pitfalls and the ambuscades, and of all the traps to be laid therein, pedigrees are the rarest. I struck our own escutcheon. And it sounded hollow. I followed up the quarry, and I discovered that even we, the lords of Loch Orb, have an outlaw for a cousin. And I wish we had more if they're all like you.
But once and for all, how are you my guardian?
I am your guardian, or to put it another way, you are my ward, because you were my father's ward under Scottish law. And now my father is so deaf, I have succeeded to that right, at least in my own opinion. Under which claim I am here to neglect my trust no longer, but to take you away from scenes and deeds which are not the best for young gentlewomen. There. Now is not that spoken like a guardian. After that, can you mistrust me?
But good cousin Alan, it is not proper for young ladies to go away with young gentlemen, even if they are their guardians 50 times over. But if you will come with me and explain your tale to my grandfather, he will listen to you and take no advantage of you.
Oh, thank you very much for leading the goose into the fox's den. Now, only come with me and I will pledge my honour against all harm and bear you safely to London. By the law of the realm, I am entitled to the custody of your person and of all your chattels.
But it seems to me that all you have learned of the law is how to live without it.
Fairly met, cousin mine. Your wit will do me credit. Come. Your aunt, my mother, is longing to receive you. Though she knows not of your coming, in a few months' time you shall set the mode at court, instead of pining here and waving crowns of daisies. Quick! Before the storm is upon us. Though I should have thought these Exmoor hills too small to gather thunder.
I cannot and I will not go with you. You're not grave enough or old enough for me. My aunt Sabina would not approve of it, and neither would my grandfather. I thank you very much for coming, but now I wish you would go.
Fair cousin, you will grieve for this. You will mourn when you cannot mend it. I wish my mother had been here. She would soon have persuaded you. Though it would have been an uncouth thing for her ladyship to have waited on you, as her graceless son has done, and hoped to have done again.
That you will never do. I can promise you that. Norma, go back to the house. You're late for supper, and Sir Ensor is angry. Go.
Yes, Carver. But I beg you, show mercy to this young man. He has done me no harm, and he is scarcely more than a boy.
I should never have asked for that myself, Carpadoon.
No! And little good it would have done you if you had. Lorna, go!
Yes, Carver, but if you have any regard for me...
Must I ask you again? Now for you, my little man. Oh, but one thing first. How did you come here?
Down the cliff from the forest.
Indeed. Well, I doubt you could have climbed up again, even had you lived.
If you would but let me get my sword, sir, I would give you fair fight.
No doubt you would. But I never had liking for fair fight, as you call it, sir. I think my bare hands will suffice for this. I shall break you across this fallen tree!
I'd never realized till then what evil things my people did. And none more than Carver.
Don't talk about it. If it distresses you, Mistress Lorna.
I'm glad to have spoken of it. Now perhaps you understand why I have such fears for you when you come here. You must promise me never to come again.
Never, Lorna? I don't think I could promise that.
Well then, not for a month at least.
Very well. Not for a month. But suppose you should need me before then.
And why might that be?
I don't know. But anything might happen. Could we not... If I promise not to come before another month is out, could we not agree upon some signal, should you want me before?
Very well. But what sort of signal?
Well, when I stood at the edge of Badgery Forest, looking down upon this valley...
And why were you doing that?
Oh, merely out of interest, Mistress Lorna. But I noticed a white rock which stands just outside the entrance to this place. Now, if you should cover that with something, then that would be the signal that I was to come to you.
Very well, if it pleases you. But how often are you prepared to climb all the way up through the forest to the edge of the cliff just to see if that rock is uncovered?
Oh, every day if need be, Mistress Lorna. Do I have to tell you that?
After hearing that tale from Lorna, I went home in sorry spirits, having added fear for her to my other ailments. And was it not quite certain now that she, being a full cousin to a peer and lord of Scotland, albeit a dead one, must have nothing to do with me, a yeoman's son, and bound to be the father of more yeomen? Moreover, I was greatly vexed with my own stupidity or shyness or whatever it was that held me back from saying that I must die unless she let me love her. With all these thoughts and many more churning round in my head, I strode into our kitchen to find young Marwood de Witchhouse, only son of the Baron, with his arm round our Annie's waist, and she all blushing and coaxing him off.
What the devil?
John. Why? John Ridd, old friend.
Don't you old friend me!
That's my sister you had your arm round. And just think yourself lucky I gave you the flat of my hand and not the fist.
Ridd, old friend. Master John Ridd.
For goodness sake,
Is this the way to treat an old school friend?
Oh, John, be not angry with him. No harm was intended or done.
Quiet, Annie. And what school friend of yours was I?
Why, we both went to Blundell's, did we not?
Yes, and you my elder by 3 years. The only notice you ever took of us small fry was to set us at each other's throats and gather round and watch the fun.
John, for goodness sake, did you not hear the sound just now? So close at hand and only at the fall of twilight.
Aye, I heard it.
Well, it frightened me so. And Squire Marwood was only comforting.
Yes, I swear upon mine honor, Rid. That's all there was to it.
And how come you to be here at all? And Annie? Where's Mother and Lizzie and Betty Muxworthy?
They're all about on different errands here and there.
You saw my hands and servants in the yard, Rid?
I did.
Why, I was taking a shortcut across Plover's Barrows after chasing the busters.
And they in the breeding season.
Be that as it may, I felt a thirst upon me, and your sister here, who seems to know more of hospitality than you do, I may say, offered me some cider. Then, as she said, came that strange sound we've been hearing all through the winter, and she was frightened. And then you came in. Now, here's my hand, Rid. Will you take it?
Oh, do, John, for my sake. It's not like you to be so unfriendly.
Annie, you are my sister, and I do have your honor to think of. However, to please you, and because I cannot prove there was anything amiss, I take your hand, which I'll... And there let there be an end of it.
'Twas not in my nature to keep any anger against young Marwood to which house, and to do Annie justice, she had no desire to see him again. Besides, it's a very grievous thing that touches small landowners to see an ancient family day by day decaying. And we had only just heard that Leigh Barton and all the manor of Linton was under a heavy mortgage debt, and there was little that we would not gladly do or suffer for the benefit of the Witch House. And so the spring came on, and the spring wheat and the barley and oats were overrun by ill weeds growing faster, so we had our work cut out. One afternoon, just as I was saying to myself that in 5 days more my month would be done and I would be free to go and seek Lorna again, a man came riding up from the ford where the road goes through the Lynn.
Service of the king! Come here, you great yokel, at risk of fine and imprisonment.
Sir?
Now, is there anywhere in this cursed county a cursed place called Plover's Barrows Farm? The last 20 miles at least, they've told me it were only half a mile further or just round the corner. Now, you tell me that and I'll thwack you. If you weren't 3 times besides.
You should not have the trouble, sir. This is Plover's Barrows Farm and you're kindly welcome. For supper is sheep's kidneys.
This is Plover's Barrows Farm. Oh, God be praised and thanked. Oh, here, fellow, help me down. God only knows how tired I am. I dare not trust myself to stand here. Your arm, good fellow. Oh, 10 days I've been in the saddle and never a decent meal. Sheep's kidneys, you say?
Aye, sir.
Ah, sheep's kidneys is good, uncommon good if they're done without burning.
John? Who is that?
King's messenger, mother. Have down the cut ham and cut a few rashers of hung deer's meat.
Yes, John.
I wish I may go to a place never meant for me, if ever I fell among such good folk. All this shall go in your favor when I make deposition. Yeah, and that hung deer's meat. Now, is it of the red deer running wild in these parts?
Oh, to be sure it is, sir. Where should we get any other?
Yeah, right, you're right, my son. Some of them came and scared me so much in the morning fog that I've hungered for them ever since. But your mother will not forget it.
Oh, you may trust her to forget nothing, sir, that may tempt a guest to his comfort.
Then I'll leave my horse in your hands and be off for it. I almost forgot my business. Hungry I am and sore of body, yet I may not rest, nor bite barley bread, until I have seen and touched John Ridd. Eh? God grant he be not far away.
Oh, have no fear, good sir. You've seen and touched John Ridd. I'm he.
Better and better. John Ridd. In the name of the king, his majesty, Charles II, these presents.
Heavens, sir.
Oh, well, go along, take them and take them. I want my supper now. Open and read.
This is for me?
Yes, the parchment is for you. Now break the seals and open it.
You must excuse me, sir, but I...
Oh, read now, come along. What is it? Oh, can't you read?
Sir, I'd have you know I went to school at Blundell's in Tiverton. I'm just overcome.
For pity's sake, overcome your overcomeness and read.
Very well, sir.
to our good subject, John Ridd. By these presents, greetings. These are to require thee, in the name of our Lord the King, to appear in person before the right worshipful of the justices of His Majesty's bench at Westminster, laying aside all thine own business, and there to deliver such evidence as is within thy cognizance, touching certain matters whereby the peace of our realm is, or otherwise may be impeached, impugned, imperiled, or otherwise detrimented. As witness these presents, charges will be borne. The matter is full urgent. If you please, sir, what's your name?
Jeremy Stickles is my name, lad. Nothing more than a poor apparitor of the worshipful court of King's Bench. Aye, and at this moment a starving one.
Annie is seen to the supper. John, is anything amiss? And who is this gentleman?
Nothing amiss, Mother. It seems I'm required to go to London at the command of His Majesty the King.
London, John? The King? Oh, whatever for?
Well, I find that hard to say, except that this document here, with all these seals...
Go, oh, Mrs. Ray, Lord. Do not distress yourself. The King on his throne is unhappy until he has seen your son, whose fame has gone so far. His size, his virtues. Well, the King is overcome by it all.
Well, then, we be loyal folk round these parts. The King shall have my John, but only for a fortnight, mind.
And my name is Stickles, and I hear there is sheep's kidneys for supper, so let us proceed indoors.
What the King might want with me, I could not begin to think, and neither would Mr. Stickles drop a hint. Also, I was cast into the pit of sorrow, for how was I to see Lorna now, and what would she think of me when I did not come? A good turkey cock took Mr. Stickles' fancy and persuaded him to stay another day or two, and Mother assembled every good needlewoman our side of Exmoor so that I had fit apparel, and that held us up another day. But the white stone that was the signal between Lorna and me remained uncovered, and I had no excuse for returning to Glentoon before the month. And so I set out only one day before I could with honor have gone again to see Lorna. Our journey to London took 7 or 8 days, but it was made the pleasanter by my kinship with Tom Faggus, or Squire Faggus, as he was known, now that he'd given up his former profession and was living respectably. It procured for us good victuals at the inns upon the way, and once, as we rode through Berkshire, more than that.
Gentlemen!
What?
Regretfully, I must ask you to deliver up any valuables you may have upon you. Money or jewels, I'm not particular. As you see, I hold in each hand a good argument to counter any you may have yourselves.
And if I were to say, sir, that I'm first cousin to Tom Faggus of Somerset, what would your answer be to that?
Tom Faggus? Squire Faggus, mean you? Oh, forgive me, gentlemen. Had I known that, I would not have troubled you. Many and many a happy day if I worked this road with him. Commend me to his love and prayers. King my name is, and king by nature. Mention me, and none will trouble you between here and Tyburn. A farewell, and a pleasant journey to you both.
London I did not like at all, except the River Thames and the hall and church of Westminster. But for the rest, it was a hideous, dirty place, not at all like Exmoor. Whenever I wandered in the streets, the noise of the people, the rattle of the coaches, the running of the footmen, and the swaggering of great courtiers made me long to be back among the sheep again, for fear of losing temper. Now, this being the year of our Lord, 1683, all London was in a great ferment. The King was quite resolved to be supreme in the appointment of the chief officers of the corporation, but the citizens maintained that this right lay entirely with themselves. The question was even then being tried in the court of His Majesty's bench, so that my case, which had appeared so urgent, was put off time and again. At length, being quite at the end of my money, I determined to force my way to the justices and insist upon being heard or discharged from my recognizance. Accordingly, I made my way for the 20th time to the Hall of Westminster.
Young man, is your name John Ridd?
Indeed it is, sir. And many a long day...
I am Counselor Kitch, and I have studied your case. Perhaps you are free for a few moments. Now, John, how is your dear mother?
My mother? Worshipful sir, it's 2 months since I've seen her. Would to God I could answer your question and knew how the farm was faring.
Sir, I respect and admire you. Honesty is written in your countenance, and courage and simplicity. But I fear that in this town of London, a man like you is apt to be taken in by people of no principle. Ah, me, the world is bad, and I am too old to improve it.
Worshipful sir, I'm bound under a thing called recognizance. I'm at the end of my money, having been here all the time. 8 weeks, as I believe I mentioned.
Well, good God! In what country do we live? Under what laws are we governed? No case before the court whatever, no primary deposition so far as we are furnished, not even a king's writ issued, and here we have a fine young man, dragged from his home and adoring mother, during the height of agriculture, at his own cost and charges. I have heard of many grievances, but this the very worst of all. Nothing short of a royal commission could be warranty for it. This is not only illegal, sir, but gravely unconstitutional.
I would not have told you, worthy sir, if I'd thought your sense of right would be so painfully moved. I beg you to accept.
Oh, no, my son, not two.
My very best thanks. And if any business should bring you to our part of the world, I trust you'll not forget that we will do our best to make you comfortable.
Young man. A general invitation is no entry for my fee book. I have spent a good hour of business time in mastering your case and stating my opinion of it, and being a member of the bar called 36 years ago, my fee is at my own discretion.
Fee, sir? But I thought...
For the honor of the profession and my own position in it, I ought to charge you at least 5 guineas.
What?
Although I would have accepted 1, offered with goodwill and delicacy. Now I will enter it 2, my son, and 1/2 crown for my clerk's fee.
But good sir, I did not know that I was to pay. I never thought of it in that way.
Fools of God! In what way did you think a lawyer listened to your rigmarole?
I thought you listened from kindness, sir. And compassion of my case, and a sort of liking for me.
A lawyer like thee, you young curmudgeon. A lawyer afford to feel compassion gratis. Either you are a very deep trickster, or the greenest of all greenhorns. Well, I suppose I must let you off for 1 guinea and the clerk's fee. A bad business, a shocking bad business.
Sir, I am no curmudgeon. If due, this money shall be paid, even though I'd no desire to incur the debt. You've advised me that the court is liable for my expenses. Well, if these 2 guineas you wish to charge to me be a reasonable expense, Come with me now to Lord Justice Jeffreys, for it was he who required me here, and receive them from him. Come now!
In the name of God, boy, let me go! My wife is sick, and my daughter dying. In the name of God, sir, let me go!
No, I can't let you go unpaid, sir. Right is right, and you shall have it.
Ruin is what I shall have if you drag me before that devil. He will strike me from the bar at once and starve me and all my family... Here, lad. Good lad. Take these 2 guineas. Never again will I trust my eyes for knowledge of a greenhorn.
Learned sir, you spoke twice, as I remember, of a clerk's fee.
To be sure, my son. You have a clerk as much as I have. There it is. Now, I beg you, take to a study of the law. Possession is 9 points of it, which you have of me. Self-possession is 10th, which you have more than the other 9. And now farewell.
And he was out of sight in less than a second. Then the crier of the court came up and wanted to know who I was and what my business. So I told him, upon which he showed me to an underclerk, who showed me to a higher one, and the higher clerk to the head one.
John Ridd. Is it your deliberate desire to be brought into the presence of the Lord Chief Justice?
Sir, it's been my desire these last 2 months.
Then you shall be. But mind one thing. 1 word of your long detention and you may find yourself in serious trouble.
No, sir. For being detained against my own
wish. Now, if my lord cross-question you, answer him straight out truth at once, for he will have it out of you. And he does not like to be contradicted, nor does he like a hangdog look. Take little heed of the other two, but note every word of the middle one. And never make him speak twice. In with you.
But, sir, I...
And who are you?
May it please your worship. I'm John Ridd of Orr Parish in the county of Somerset. Brought to this London some 2 months back by special messenger whose name is Jeremy Stickles, and then bound over to be at hand and ready when called upon to give evidence in a matter unknown to me, but touching the peace of our Lord the King. And every day, save Sunday, I've walked up and down the great hall of Westminster, all the business part of the day, expecting to be called upon, yet no one hath called me. And now I desire to ask your worship whether I may go home again.
Well done, John. I'll go bail for you. You've never made a speech like that before. And you're a spunky Briton, or you couldn't have made it now. I remember the matter well, and will attend to it myself, but I cannot take it now, John. I grieve for His Majesty's Exchequer after keeping you 2 months.
I beg your pardon, my lord, but my mother has been keeping me. Not a groat have I received.
Spank? Is this so? Spank? Huh? Is His Majesty come to this, that he starves his own approvers?
My lord, the matter has been overlooked among such grave matters as we've been dealing with of late.
I will overlook your head, foul Spank, on a spike from Temple Bar, if ever I hear of the like again. Vile varlet, what are you paid for? You've swindled the money yourself.
My lord, I promise you that...
Answer me not! One word more and I'll have you on a hurdle. John Ridd. You have been shamefully used. Go to Master Spank and let me know how he behaves to you. Come here again tomorrow, and before any other case is taken, I will see justice done to you. Now, be off, boy. Your name is Ridd, and we are well rid of you.
Good Master Ridd, this is for you. Take it all. Take it all and say a good word to me, to his lordship. He's taken a strange fancy to you, and you must make the most of it. Stay in London, Master Ridd, and he will make your fortune. His joke upon your name proves that. And I pray you, remember, Master Ridd, that the Spanks are 16 in family.
Master Spanks? I have here a note of all I've spent on food and lodging, right up to this morning's breakfast. That much I will take, and no more. Huh? 'Tis quite enough, as you will see.
Well, if that's your way of using opportunity, you will never thrive in these times, my lad. Even the Lord Chief Justice can be a little help to you, unless you know better than that how to help yourself. Here, you'd better take it twice over.
No, Master Spanks, I'll take it but once. Hmm? If His Majesty loves to be robbed, he need not lack of his desire while the Spanks are 16 in family.
I fail to comprehend your attitude, Master Ridd. Here, exactly what is owed, not one penny more.
I thank you kindly, Master Spanks.
And you'd better not be late in the morning.
The next morning, I was there in good time, in my fine new coat, and this time I found Lord Chief Justice Jeffreys alone.
Now, Jack. I am ready to examine thee. And the truth mine, for I will have it out of you.
I am ready to answer, my lord, so long as it is nothing beyond my knowledge or my honor.
You'd better answer me everything, lump. What have you to do with honor? Now, is there in your neighborhood a certain nest of robbers, miscreants, outlaws, whom all men fear?
Yes, my lord. At least, I believe some of them be robbers, and all of them are outlaws.
What is the name of this pestilent race, and how many of them are there?
They are the Doones of Badgery Forest, may it please your worship. And we reckon there be about 40 of them, besides the women and children.
40 Doones? All 40 thieves? And women and children? Thunder of God! How long have they been there?
It may be 30 years, my lord. And indeed, it may be 40. Before the Great War broke out, they came. Longer back than I can remember.
Aye, long before you were born, John Ridd. Good. You speak plainly. Woe betide a liar when I get hold of him. You want me on the Western Circuit, and by God you shall have me, when London traitors are spun and swung. There is a family called a witch house living very near you, John.
Yes, my lord, there is. At least not so very far from us. Baron de Witch House of Ley Manor.
Baron! The Exchequer, eh, lad? And takes dues instead of His Majesty, some of which stays there, which ought to come a little further, I believe. It shall be seen to. Riotous knaves in West England, drunken outlaws, you shall dance if ever I pipe for you. John Ridd, I will come to Orr Parish and rout out the Orr of Babylon.
Although your worship is so learned,
Your worship does little justice to us. We are downright good and loyal folk, and I've not seen in this great town of London any who may better us or even come near us in honesty and goodness and duty to our neighbours. For we are very quiet folk and not prating of our own.
Enough, person. Good John, enough. Now, have you ever heard or thought that the witch house is in league with the Doones of Badgery?
Your worship, I...
Ah, John Ridd, your eyes are enough for me. I see you have never dreamed it. Now, have you ever seen a man whose name is Tom Faggus?
Oh, yes, sir. Many and many a time. He's my own cousin.
And a good man. He has made mistakes as to the title to property, as lawyers often may do. But take him all for all, he is a thoroughly straightforward man, presents his bill, has it paid, and makes no charge for drawing it. Nevertheless, we must tax his costs, as of any other solicitor.
To be sure, my lord.
But tell him this from me, Jack. I fear he will come to the gallows.
No!
Oh, he shall never be condemned before me. But I cannot be everywhere. Tell him to change his name, turn parson, or do something else to make it wrong to hang him. Now, a few more things, John Ridd, and for the present I have done with you. Is there any sound in your part of the country of disaffection to His Majesty? His most gracious majesty?
No, my lord. No sign whatever. We pray for him in church and talk about him afterwards, but after that we've nothing to say, not knowing much about him. At least until I get home again.
That is as it should be, John. And the less you say, the better. But I have heard of things in Taunton, and even nearer to you in Dulverton, and even nearer still upon Exmoor, things which are of the pillory kind, and even more of the gallows. I see that you know nothing of them. Nevertheless, it will not be long before all England knows them. Now, John, I have taken a liking to you, for never a man told me the truth more thoroughly and truly than you have done. A word in your ear. Keep clear of all this, my son. It will come to nothing, yet many shall swing high for it. Even I could not save you if you were mixed up in this affair. Keep from the Doones, keep from the witch house, keep from everything which leads beyond the sight of your knowledge. I meant to use you as my tool, but I see you are too honest and too simple. I will send down a sharper one. But never let me find you, John, a tool for the other side, or a tube for my words to pass through. Now, be off with you. I shall remember you, and I believe it will be many a day before you forget me.
And indeed it was, for it crossed my mind that this Lord Chief Justice Jeffreys must be the very same that Uncle Reuben had told me to look at straight and tell no lie to. And how Reuben Huckaback might have access to so great a man was more than my wits could tell me. And in truth I had more pressing problems. For though I was free to go now, yet I was not free, and the reason was money.
Why, 'tis John Ridd,
Master Stickles.
Oh, but why is it downcast, eh? No, 'tis not every country boy comes to see the great capital and go home a famous man with tales to tell.
Oh, Mr. Stickles, 'tis good to see your face. For truth to tell, I begin to feel very lonely among all these people. And I wonder indeed if I shall ever see home again.
Why, have they not heard you yet?
Oh, yes, they've heard me, but... Mr. Stickles, be so kind as to step up to my lodgings. They're but round the corner, and I'd rather not confess my foolishness in such a public place. So I received from Master Spank the amount of the bill I delivered, paid my debts, and then, supposing myself to be an established creditor of the Treasury for my coming needs, what must I do but spend upon presents for Mother and Annie and Lizzie and, well, very nearly half the folk of all?
Of course.
Now, when I went back to Master Spank, not half an hour ago, to ask for money for my journey home, he tells me to go to the devil. If I would not take double when offered, I should have none now. And here we are with the time of the hay gone past and the harvest of small corn coming on, and I shall have to walk to all... and must needs beg my victuals some part of the way.
Now need you ask why so downcast?
It's the way of the world, Jack. They got all they can from you, so why should they feed you further? Do you feed a fat pig upon the day of the killing?
'Tis not the way of we Exmoor folk to treat a person so.
Jack, yeah, for the pleasure of seeing your countenance somewhat lighten, you shall have £5.
What?
£5. And I shall take my chance of wringing it from that great rogue Spank. 10 I would have made it, but for bad luck lately.
Oh, Master Stickles, you are a good man indeed. Here, I shall give you a note upon it.
Put back your bits of paper, lad. I'll have no acknowledgement. Here, here, take it. And a safe journey to go with it.
How shall I tell you the things I felt as I drew nearer and more near to the place of all I loved, to the haunt of every warm remembrance, in a word, to home? The first sheep I saw on the moor, with a great red JR on his side, I do assure you that my spirit leapt, and I shouted out, "Jamboy!" For that was his name, and a rare hand he was at fighting, and stroked his head. Swore he never would be mutton. And then at the corner of the dry stone wall, Annie!
John! Oh, John!
Annie!
Oh, I've waited here every Sunday night, and I saw you for the last mile or more, but I'd not come round the corner for fear I should cry, John, and then not cry when I got to you. Oh, John, how we've all missed you!
And are all well, Annie? Mother and Lizzie and John Fry and all the men are all well?
None so well they shan't feel better for seeing you home again. Dear John!
Much as I longed to see Lorna again, I could not reconcile it with my duty to Mother and Annie to leave them on the following day. So on the Monday morning, I left the men of the farm as far away as might be and went first to the cliff from which I could watch for the signal agreed upon between Lorna and me. And sure enough, I saw that the white stone had been covered over. What evil fortune that I should be too late in the very thing of all things on which my heart was set. Then, with small respect either for my knees or neck, I made the round of the outer cliffs to come up by the waterfall. And after a long wait, at last I saw her coming towards me.
Why? Who is this? Stranger here.
Mistress Lorna! I had hope that you were in need of me.
Oh, yes. That was long ago. 2 months ago or more.
Lorna!
Master Reed, I did not mean to vex you. Come into the rock with me. They watch me more closely than they used to.
You love me?
I like you very much.
But do you love me, Lorna? Do you love me more than all the world?
No, to be sure not. Now, why should I?
No, I don't know why you should. I only know that I hope you did.
John, I like you very much, and I would not grieve you, and I think of you almost every day.
That will not do for me, Lorna. I think of you every instant of my life. For you, I'd give up my home, my duty to my dearest ones. I would give up life and hope of life beyond it. Do you love me so?
Not by any means. I like you very much when you do not talk so wildly. But as to liking you like that, what should make it likely? Especially when I have made the signal, and for more than 2 months you have not answered it.
There was good reason beyond my power.
If you like me so much as you say, why do you leave me for other people to do just as they like with me?
Oh, Lorna, not to make you marry one of them.
No, Master Ridd. Do not look so fierce. It makes me afraid to look at you.
But you've not married yet. Say, quick, why do you keep me waiting so?
Of course not. Do you think I should be here if I had, letting you hold my hand?
But tell me all about it. Who is it they want you to marry? Not Carver. When's it to be?
Oh, John, they are not half so impetuous as you. I am only just 17, you know. But there is one named Charleworth Doone, and the counselor chose to fancy that he looked at me too much coming by my grandfather's cottage.
He'd better not. I'll fling him over it. He'll see you through the roof if he sees you at all.
Master Ridd! And I thought you were so kind-hearted. Well, they wanted me to promise that I would marry my eldest cousin, Carver Doone.
By heaven, no! He who killed young Alan Brandir, no, by my life!
John Ridd, be quiet and listen to what I have to say. They said it would be good for the peace of the family and my own good, but I would not listen. He's twice my age, 35 and upwards, so I would not promise. Even though Counselor argued and Grandfather persuaded and Carver smiled his pleasantest, which is a horrible sight, I promise you. They would have had to use force with me, but Sir Ensor would not hear of it. So I'm safe from that until he shall be past knowing it. And now I am watched and spied and followed, and it's only through good little Gwenny Carfax that I'm here now.
Lorna, look. I have something for you. I doubt I would have had the courage to show it to you, but for what you've just said. Will you take it?
Oh, Master Ritt. I thought you were much too simple ever to do this sort of thing. Pearls and a sapphire. It's beautiful. But I dare not take it now. I should be cheating you if I did. I like you dearly, John. And if you will only keep away, I will like you more and more.
Dearest darling, love of my life. How long must I wait to know?
Keep this ring for me, John. Something tells me I shall earn it in a very little time. Perhaps you will be sorry then, when it is all too late to be loved by Lorna Doone.
That was part two of Lorna Doone, dramatized for radio by Brian Gere from the novel by R.D. Blackmore, with Jack Watson as the storyteller, Cornelius Garrett as John Ridd, and Stacey Dorning as Lorna Doone. Others in the cast, Mrs. Ridd, June Barry, Judge Jeffries, Malcolm Gerard, Jeremy Stickles, Rex Holdsworth, Carver Doone, Brian Jackson, Annie Ridd, Petra Lear, Mother Meldrum, Daphne Hurd, Alan Brandier and Kitch, Graham Pountney, Marwood de Witchholz and King, Daniel Hill. The program, which came from Bristol, was directed by Brian Miller.